Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey. Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Today's cool fact of the day is that people who think they're turning their head further than they are report neck pain earlier than people who think they're turning their head less than they actually are. And that's probably because your body starts sending pain signals when it senses danger rather than when it actually feels pain. So it's tricking you without your knowledge or permission, which is why you should listen to your body, but you shouldn't always trust what it tells you.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us, and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Today's show is going to be really, really fun because I've got two world-renowned chiropractic experts, Dr. Dan Yachter and Dr. Deed Harrison. Dr. Yachter is one of the five chiropractic thought leaders who co-founded Evolution Health, which is a new type of chiropractor that builds international offices based on some standards. And he's the author of the book called The Doctor of the Future. Dr. Deed Harrison is a chiropractic researcher and educator who has developed his own set of spinal rehab procedures and has lectured thousands of chiropractors and regular MDs in hundreds of educational conferences around the world. He's written about 100 peer-reviewed spine publications and 5 textbooks on the spine, and he's the director of the Ideal Spine Health Center in Eagle, Idaho. Welcome, Dan, indeed.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dave. Honored to be here.
So I'll admit, I've used chiropractic for quite a long time. Probably the first time I went was 1997. I woke up and my back hurt like I'd never felt before. I mean, it was just horrible. And I went to work anyway, and I was turning green. And my boss at the time, she's like, Dave, something's wrong. I'm like, yeah, my back kind of hurts. And she's like, you need to go like see a doctor or something. And I'm like, doctors don't do anything for the back pain. So I just randomly found a chiropractor, and he did something that kind of helped. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I got more and more interested in what's going on, and discovered that there's literally hundreds and hundreds of different belief systems is the wrong side. We'll say subspecialties of chiropractic, where some people are looking at thermal imaging, some people are doing this. But I found that it's a real science, and it's practiced in many, many different ways. Yet there's still some degree of say skepticism. Like, I think my father's probably never been to a chiropractor because, well, I don't know, they might crack your back and then you'd be addicted and all these weird things. My first question for you guys, as people have spent your career in this stuff, why is there skepticism towards chiropractic?
I think really more than anything, it's kind of what we're doing today is we're going to be reaching so many people to help them. It's really an understanding. Once the understanding comes of what chiropractic is about, I think people would be open to it because it's logical. It's common sense. When you explain the fact that structure determines function and they're so interrelated and, you know, really as a chiropractor, Dr. Deed and I know the ultimate biomechanical and functional performance hack is making sure the spine is in alignment because, you know, reason follows where if you have a spinal cord that's running through the spine and it's delivering communication from the system that's running the body, the brain and the spinal cord control, coordinate, harmonize, regulate, direct every single function of the body. Every organ and gland is controlled from air traffic control, Houston control. And there are 24 movable vertebrae, a sacrum and a coccyx, and the nerve system is housed within the spine. And very simply, if any of the bones are out of their normal alignment, they can create a mechanical irritation, an impingement, a stress, a tension on the nerve system itself. And that will disrupt the messages, the communication, the transmission through this energy system, this electrical system. And that will then cause organs and cells, tissues, glands to break down. So it's really just a matter of understanding communication. If the public understood the message in a simple way that way and understood that their health, their energy, their ability to heal is directly related to the position of their spine, to their skeletal structure and the alignment and everything that goes along with it, it's a simple message. And anybody that Dr. Deed and I have ever really explained it to, people say, well, of course. But what happens in, typically in the public, there are a lot of different messages that are going on. That's why I think the public is never really on a grand scale understood. But Dr. Deed is one of the top researchers in the world, and he can, you know, share with you what he's been involved with in the research. And there's so much research that's been done that he's been involved with that he's been bringing to the world and bringing to the chiropractic profession to really show the power of what happens when you have a clear functioning nerve system. It's powerful on many levels, including performance in general.
I definitely understand what you're saying there. Deed, you've been doing this for quite a while, and I've seen a change in the way people perceive chiropractic. It's much more accepted now than it was 10 or 20 years ago, but it's been going on for a very long time, and it seems almost like there's been some competitive stress from other medical professions who, you know, didn't necessarily like what was going on there. Have you experienced that in your career?
Oh, sure, and you know, your question and comment hits the nail on the head. The reality, though, chiropractic's market share hasn't grown in the last 10 years. What's happened is there's just been maybe a louder voice. And so it appears that we have greater public interest and greater community support. But the reality of it is it's still under 10% of the population actually regularly sees a chiropractor. And that's been going on for at least the last decade, maybe two decades. The issue is chiropractic is kind of the small kid on the block. We're the newer kid in healthcare, and always the group that has the louder voice with the most money and the most resources tends to really influence the public perception. And chiropractic has never really had a really big marketing voice. We've never had the dollars. We don't have industry that backs our profession. And so the reality, the profession isn't well known to the public. And it's like Dr. Dan said, if they really knew what we did, there wouldn't be this skepticism. But I've seen the skepticism in my career from a clinical point of view, but also from a research point of view too, where you're kind of, in some ways, you're not given the same level of entry into research because you are a chiropractor. So yeah, the skepticism runs deep.
It's very different than Big Pharma, and it's certainly not funded by Big Pharma, but I want to hear your story about how you got into this and you ended up writing 100 peer-reviewed publications and all. So how did you get started, Deed? Kind of walk me through what attracted you to chiropractic and then how you've built a career doing this.
You know, that's a great question. Thank you, Dave. The reality of it is I got a great start from my father. My late father passed away in 2011, was really a pioneer in the chiropractic profession, and his name was Dr. Don Harrison. So he graduated chiropractic college in the late 1970s, and in his era, there was really no chiropractic research at all. There really wasn't even a chiropractic professional scientific journal. So my dad came from a math and science background. He already had a master's degree in math and a bachelor's degree in physics. And then when he got into chiropractic, he saw the lack of science, and as did many people in his era. And so he really pioneered the organization that I now head up today, which is chiropractic biophysics. So long story short, my dad's the one that started the technique analysis and system. He started our research foundation in the late 1980s. And then I came along in 1994 when I went to chiropractic college. And I went to chiropractic college simply because I'd grown up as a chiropractic child. I'd seen it. I've heard it. I was in my dad's practice, et cetera. And I just came along at the right time, I think. And of course, you know, not belittling myself, but I was given a gift, and I got to run with it.
Awesome. That makes a lot of sense, because when you see your parents do it, and you sort of understand that there is a certain skill that's involved in being a chiropractor that is different than being a physician. Physicians also have bedside manner. You know, some of them are really good at their surgical thing or whatever else you're doing, some better than others. But I feel like there's a little bit more hands-on manipulation, so to speak, when you're a chiropractor. So the difference between chiropractor A and chiropractor B is likely to be greater than the difference between physician A and physician B in the same subspecialty. At least that's been my experience.
Yeah, that's totally true. The reality of it is a lot of it's the connection between the doctor and the patient, and then the skill level and the training of the doctor themselves, the chiropractor. And, you know, this might be some of the skepticism, too. People may have experienced a not so good adjustment from a chiropractor. And then they have this skeptical mind and they say, oh, the chiropractors are quacks. I'm not going back. Well, the reality of it is they just didn't find the right one that connected with them. It's kind of like when you go out to eat. Sometimes you might actually go to a restaurant and you get food poisoning. That doesn't mean you're never going to eat again, right?
It doesn't mean you should never trust a chef. Right. In fact, that's a beautiful analogy. And there are certainly different levels of experience there. Dan, how did you find yourself in this field?
It's interesting. I was at the University of Florida pre-med student. And my brother, prior to that, he got in a really bad car accident in his early 20s. And severe back pain, very, very severe injury he had for his back, his spine. The only options the doctors were really talking about were surgery, lots of drugs, painkillers. While he was attending the University of Florida, his best friend told him, go see my chiropractor. My chiropractor is going to save you from the blades and from the drugs. So my brother went. Within a few weeks, he had full function and health back to his body, restored. I never needed the drugs or the surgery. Following that experience, he decided he wanted to become a chiropractor. I never had a chiropractor in my family. Mother, father, nobody in my lineage was ever a chiropractor. My brother was just inspired by that experience. So he went off to chiropractic school and started learning, started getting his hands skilled, and kind of to backtrack a little bit, and kind of you'll see how the story unfolds here. My father, when he was 7 years of age, he went down a slide head first. And the slide ended in a lake, and right underneath the slide was a cast iron bathtub. My father's head collided with the bathtub, had a very serious cranial trauma, almost drowned, was knocked out cold, but was able to get through that episode. And my father spent the next several decades experiencing crippling migraine headaches.
Ooh.
And he ended up taking massive amounts of painkillers, drugs, a couple of organs got knocked out. He was miserable. And I grew up watching my father go through this. It was life-altering, to say the least, for my dad. So my dad was always miserable. It was a very serious life disruptor for my father. So to come full circle back to my brother. My brother comes home after his first year in chiropractic school and says to my dad, "Hey, I think what I'm learning in school may be able to help you." My father still, this is 40 years into his headaches, still living in tormenting pain. No doctors had been able to help him. All he was offered were more medications. No one could figure out what was wrong with him. My brother did an evaluation on my father and discovered the atlas vertebrae, the first bone, was out of alignment. And most of the time with headaches, most of the literature states that headaches are typically cervicogenic. They typically originate in the upper cervical spine. Now, my father never had pain. He had more of a functional issue being caused by the atlas out of alignment that was creating a mechanical distortion of the brainstem and that whole area. No pain. So maybe a physician would have done a physical examination on him had he complained about neck pain, but he never had any neck pain. So my brother, through a discussion with my father and through an analysis, discovered this bone out of alignment, convinced my father to allow him to adjust him. And he did a series of adjustments while he was home. It was like a Christmas vacation. He was home for quite a while, a few weeks, maybe a month. And he did a whole series of adjustments. And that was that. He went back to Atlanta, to Life University, which is where we both went to chiropractic school. And then probably 4, 5, 6 months transpired. And my father called my brother on the phone and said to my brother, "You know, the headaches are gone. I don't have any headaches, completely gone." And this is well over 20 years ago. And to this day, my father has none of those headaches. He's off all the medications he was on. Because of all the disruptions in his body, he was on also, they had him on Synthroid for 35 years. He's off the Synthroid. My dad's getting ready to turn, he's going to be 75 next week. So no headaches, completely gone after 40 years of suffering, no medications, healthy, strong. And I saw that happen and it lit me up. You know, I was a pre-med student at the University of Florida and that was the direction I wanted to go in. Had my aspirations there, and I saw what chiropractic did for my father. It literally gave him his life back, and it turned me around, and I was in chiropractic school just like that.
So you basically saw it work. Both of you had an opportunity to see big changes from it. I have found that many chiropractors that I've come to know over the years are classical biohackers. They're much more connected with, okay, I'm going to make a change and see what the results are, which is actually kind of like the scientific method. but, you know, you do this. And one of the most profound experiences that made me really pay attention to this, when my son was born, I caught him. We did a birth at home, which is kind of cool. We had an emergency room physician standing by because my wife is an emergency room physician. She was the one, you know, pregnant, but what the heck? So we also had other helpers right very close to hospital, so it was very safe. And I delivered my son, but it was relatively tight coming out. And unlike my daughter, he wouldn't sleep for more than 20 minutes. And he would like move his arm in a weird way. And I'm like, you know, this baby's in pain. And just through a random connection, we got introduced to a guy who's written the only chiropractic textbook that's used for babies in regular hospitals, and he lectures around the world, teaching at basically birth wards. Like, here's what to do, and his like most famous trick was to find the infants on oxygen in the ICU and touch the back of their head with one finger at just the right spot, and their oxygen saturation would just go up and up and up in ways that are supposed to be impossible. But he's teaching it to doctors, so he took my son. 5 days old. I'm like a little nervous here. You know, I don't want to see him hold him by the head and shaking him. Kidding. No chiropractor would ever do that. But what he did is he said, okay, yeah, this is something in the upper back right, probably the atlas for all I know. And he put the pressure, he described the pressure of a nickel resting on your hand, that much pressure in just the right spot. And for the first time in 5 days, literally, Alan just kind of sat there for a second, melted into the bed and slept 12 hours straight. So he had something going on, his arm relaxed. He had something pinched up there, and he literally couldn't sleep because of it. And I imagine if I had not been fortunate to meet, like, his name is Dr. Peter Fish, to meet a chiropractor who had the right skills at the right time, it's entirely possible the first 2 years, like when Alan's brain is really cooking in there and doing what it does, it would have been disrupted by sleep and chronic pain. And so I feel like there's a whole branch of science here that's totally worth exploring, that is non-drug. And the innovations I've seen, probably partly because of the internet, because chiropractors are sharing knowledge and techniques and science that it's actually a really good time for chiropractic because the people who are not skilled, well, they have Yelp reviews. And the people who are skilled end up writing textbooks and end up getting more patients and more acclaim for the work they're doing. I think the cat's out of the bag in terms of whether or not it works. In the hands of a good practitioner, I think there's so much evidence that good things are happening here that I don't worry about it so much.
You both, Dr. Dan and Dave, have brought up wonderful, beautiful, basically case studies. Dave with your child and Dan, you know, with your father. The challenge is this, and as a researcher and a clinician, I'm in a unique spot. And the clinician in me, I look at every single person that comes in as a case study, and my job is the needs of the one. It's not the needs of the many. It's that person, that individual right there in front of me. It's a case study. The researcher in me and the skeptics out there, the other, you know, the medical research community, the surgical research community, any other, you know, scientific mind that's not a chiropractor, they look at these cases and they go, interesting coincidence. Right? And this is our challenge. The clinician and the parent and the person, we know it's real. We experienced it. We were there. So this is the problem with chiropractic is we've never had these, you know, a large scale industry fund that we could take 1,000 cases like Dan's dad or Dave, like your child, and say, okay, let's randomly assign them to, you know, conservative care, which is traditional, you know, medical intervention versus conservative care, which is chiropractic intervention. And then let's really see what happens. Now, these things are starting to be done, but they don't exist on every type of outcome. Like in your case, Dave, there's not 1,000 cases that we have on a child that's not respirating normally. And then, you know, Dave, we do have a lot of evidence Dr. Dan, we have evidence on headache. But the real challenge is doing large-scale trials to really confirm what we already know as a clinician and what we already know as the patient.
Also, large-scale trials, there's this bizarre thing that I believe is fundamentally unscientific that comes from big pharma. They don't measure tons and tons of variables that probably have a big say in the outcome here. Like, we're going to test medication, but we're not going to test the diet or even record the diet of the people taking the medication, even though there are known interactions between certain foods and certain medications. And one of the biggest things that happen when you're trying to measure a modality is you have patients. And of course, patients are all different genetically and lifestyle, whatever else, but you can identify X number of patients with some kind of condition and have an 80% certainty that they actually have that condition. If it's chronic fatigue, who knows? If it's broken legs, then okay, we can really know you have a broken leg, okay? And then you have a modality we're going to treat, like some way of treating them. Okay, those are two variables, right? And that's what we want to match up, and then that's supposed to be it. But the healer is another variable. And it is entirely possible in acupuncture, chiropractic, and even traditional medicine, but more so in the other so-called alternative medicine or even a functional medicine doctor, the quality and perception and skills of the caregiver are a variable that is just as important as the patient. So when people say, well, you know, there's no double-blind studies on that. Yeah. One of the problems is that the way the doctor acts can affect outcome. And we know this because we have placebo and nocebo effects. So I don't understand how we're trying to remove the care provider from the science when what we're doing here is not paint by numbers. If we were to evaluate an artist or a chef, you wouldn't say, well, you know what? This chef cooking technique, sorry, it doesn't work. You're like, well, it's applied differently by different chefs, right? Like that's why they have different restaurants. And that's funny. When you put a paintbrush, unless you're doing paint by numbers, which no one likes, when you put it in the hands of Monet or Picasso, you get very different outcomes, yet they're both art. What do you guys have to say about just the validity of this kind of double blind clinical trial towards something that has the care provider so integral to what it does?
So, you know, this is, you know, my field and my issue. I'm a clinician at heart, but I'm a researcher now in practice. That's what I do. And we know this. We know now that evidence-based medicine and evidence-based healthcare, evidence-based chiropractic, we know it depends on at least three variables. It's the needs of the one, the patient. And that's the unique person, like you've said, Dave, their genetics, what they do, what they eat, et cetera. So the needs of the one. Number two, it's using the best available evidence that we have at this time. Maybe it's not a double-blind randomized trial. Maybe it's just simply case studies, and that's all we have on a certain topic. So it's the best available evidence, whatever it is. And then the third one is exactly what you've said at the end. It's the training and the expertise of the provider. All those three come together to paint this picture of an outcome. The problem is when we talk about industry and funding and insurance and governments, they're interested in one thing, and it's called their bottom line, and it's cost savings. And it's really odd that they'll cut out certain things like chiropractic when it's less than 1% of an annual healthcare budget, but they do it anyway under a cost savings umbrella. And the reality, as the clinician, we know that those three things play a role in no matter what we do. We know that some people need one visit, and some people don't need dietary modifications. Other people might need 100 visits and a full spectrum of dietary and nutritional modifications. When we try to do a randomized trial, a double-blind placebo-controlled trial, there's always constraints, and it never allows freedom of the clinician to truly do what they would actually do if they weren't part of an experimental design. So by nature, randomized trials force a certain thing. They force either a start or an end, or they force a certain type of treatment intervention over a certain time. And, you know, this is the challenge. In reality, it takes the doctor-patient relationship out of it.
There's something else you mentioned. You talked about this evidence-based medicine, which is actually a really pejorative term, equivalent to non-shitty medicine.
Yeah.
like I practice non-shitty medicine because everything else other than what I say is obviously shitty.
Yeah.
And, Well, here's the deal. There are many forms of evidence. And people who are worshiping irrationally to the evidence-based gods have chosen to ignore, I think it's 6 of 7 kinds of evidence that you can accept in favor of basically saying this one, and anyone who doesn't use the kind of evidence that I like is basically, you know, a quack, a fraud, whatever else, and all that kind of BS. And it is fundamentally anti-science when someone says evidence-based. And sorry to kind of call you out there, Deed, but here's the thing. You better say what kind of evidence you're talking about, because clinical evidence, as in this guy was sick and now he's better, that is an observation. You know, the scientific method where you start with an observation, you form a hypothesis, and then you test it. And if you reject clinical outcomes and clinical observations from hundreds of thousands of care providers because there aren't double-blind science, there aren't double-blind studies there, what you're actually doing is you're practicing this bizarre form of, I don't even know what to call it. But it isn't medicine, and it's not even evidence-based. It's actually selective evidence avoidance to support whatever your hypothesis is. And it is no different than practicing, well, I would call it witch doctory.
Yeah, and this is, we're on the same page, Dave. I always take the clinical side in my profession. I'm really kind of a black sheep researcher. Even though I'm one of the top in the profession, I'm really not well thought of in the research community, and it's for what you've just said. The best available evidence to me, it could be a case study on a topic. That's all we have. And so to me, that is evidence. And the reality of it is we try to use what's called expert opinion and, you know, analogies and anecdotes. And the reality of that, it doesn't matter who the expert is, that is actually the lowest form of evidence. So a single case study, like your child and Dr. Dan's dad, that is evidence.
Yep.
And so, I mean, we have this double-edged sword. So I think I've said enough, and I'll turn it over to Dr. Dan.
Yeah, the concept here is that it's not an allopathic model. It's a vitalistic model that we're dealing with. It's a different type of paradigm to begin with. And there's what's known as really a dynamic essential, an esoteric that you can't leave out of the picture. It's what you touched upon, Dave, is what the clinician is bringing to the arena, to the office. You know, I just got finished getting a diplomate in pediatrics. So that's one of the things I heavily focus on in my office. One of just a few in the country, a handful of doctors who are really heavily focused in that arena. And we had it, in order for me to complete the studies, I had to do a lot of research. We had to gather up questionnaires and through the NIH, and a lot of data had to be, we had to put patients in a room by themselves and they had to do questionnaires. And the outcomes are great, the quality of life assessments and everything that was reported, but it also goes back to the fact is what type as a healer, what type of environment are you setting up? And as a vitalistic healthcare provider in a vitalistic paradigm, we're very conscious, we're very aware of what we're bringing to the table as well. And that's a huge piece of the puzzle. And many chiropractors, like you said a little while ago, are very focused on that. And that's what really drew me to you to begin with. I ran into you and heard you a couple of years ago at JJ Version's seminar in Tampa in January 2014. And my wife, the first thing she does when she wakes up in the morning, besides changing the diapers, because I have a one-year-old and a three-year-old, she goes to the kitchen and she gets her bulletproof coffee. And, you know, we have all these, you know, it's part of our life, the bulletproof lifestyle we've incorporated, because I know as a clinician too, I want to bring my best to the practice. But really what we're looking at, and, you know, when we're talking about the paradigm is, yes, we can't leave the practitioner out. For example, in my office, one of the things we try to do, Dee's office, like-minded chiropractors, is we try to set up an atmosphere of healing. And what does that look like? You know, it's very supportive. It's very nurturing. It's providing information. It's empowering. It's a different type of environment outside of being like dictatorial. It's more of a partnership. It's more of an alliance. It's more of you're facilitating the process. It's a very different mindset in a vitalistic paradigm or a vitalistic healthcare model. So when you set it up that way and it's fostering a sense of nurturing and support and people feel like they're growing and they're learning and they're really getting fed knowledge and they feel like they're healing and growing and learning and they attend workshops and they're getting knowledge, it's a whole different experience. It's a different reality. It's a different paradigm. And so the outcomes have to be measured maybe with standard models, but also you have to look at how do you encompass all of the different dynamics that are involved in this vitalistic paradigm, which is different. And it's not easy to measure. And it's very easy to discount when you have 100, 200, 300 babies in my practice that have all had similar experiences to your son. It's like, but okay, go back and try to track scientifically exactly how it happens. It's not as easy in a vitalistic model. I think that's where sometimes chiropractic finds its challenges in regards to research and otherwise.
Is it possible to get hurt by a chiropractor who doesn't know what they're doing, or even someone who does know what they're doing? I mean, do people get paralyzed? Do people end up with headaches? Like, is there a risk?
That's a great question. The general answer is there's a risk to everything that we do, right? The perspective is, you're 1,000 times more likely to get injured by taking an over-the-counter painkiller like an aspirin or a Tylenol than you are by going to a chiropractor for the same condition. So the perspective is people don't hesitate to take an Advil, a Tylenol, an aspirin. Yet you're 1,000 times more likely to be injured from that than by seeing a chiropractor. Are there some injuries that have, you know, been documented under chiropractic care? Yes, in, you know, trials that have been done, they look at, did you have a negative experience? Negative means, do you have a subtle increase in neck pain? Do you have a subtle increase in back pain or et cetera, following, you know, a certain visit? The reality is those things do occur, but they're transient. They tend to be very, very short-lived in nature, and they tend to be very mild in nature. And then once in a while, there's a much rarer injury that is very significant. But, you know, that's with everything we do.
It's a fair point, because no one's ever injured by their allopathic physicians either.
Right.
Statistic I saw was like 40,000 deaths a year through that kind of medicine that are unnecessary. So there's risk anytime you do anything. And I don't believe that there's undue risk in my experience with chiropractic, but... I've also heard some other pretty substantial claims like, oh, chiropractic can help you with heart disease or diabetes and these things that Western medicine doesn't necessarily, well, we'll say Western medicine likes to ignore cures for, like, oh, food. what's the chiropractic take on diseases like these?
I think it's really, chiropractic more than anything is about getting the body to perform at its best and recognizing the philosophical tenets of chiropractic are the fact that the body is a self-healing, self-regulating organism. It's got an innate intelligence, and we honor that as chiropractors, that the body can and will heal itself. It needs no help. It just needs no interference. And so chiropractic is not necessarily a treatment for things. So I make sure that the folks and Dr. Deed at his clinic and whatnot, when folks come through the door with any condition, and there are a lot of different conditions that walk through the door, the first conversation we have when we're bringing them through the initial intake, consult, and exam is that we're not going to be treating their illness, sickness, and disease. And in my estimation, we're doing something more superior, which is removing interference to the body's innate healing expression. And the first place we start is with their spine. One of the things I do a lot of in my office is I have a degree in nutrition as well, along with being a chiropractor. So I'm very, very heavy into nutrition. We're going to look at that, whether it's a neonate, a toddler, small child, an adult. But all in an effort to remove interference, not necessarily to treat. And that's really the first place that we start. If we can get the interference removed or remove as much as we can, biomechanically, chemically, maybe help them emotionally or help them find maybe mental, emotional stress reducers in this holistic approach, allow their bodies to perform at their best. The body by default wants to be well. It wants to heal. It wants to perform well and express great healing potential and great function. It knows how to do it. It just needs no interference or minimal interference in doing so.
Yep.
So it sounds suspiciously like this this bulletproof idea, which is remove the things that make you weak and do more of the things that make you strong.
That's it. You know, I love it. You know, I just got done reading the book here. At you guys sent me my copy.
Oh, and, the bulletproof diet, yeah.
Awesome. Just got the cookbook too. And,
thank you.
That's the concept. The body's smart. Then, you know, how do you biohack the body? How do you biohack the nervous system? How do you get the body working at its best, which is the concept? It's removing interference. The body, by its divine design, is to be well, to express energy. And, you know, that's what we lead our patients in. That's why so many chiropractors resonate with you as well, and your philosophy and your science and your vision.
Well, thank you. Indeed, you were going to say something in there too.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to what Dan said and what you've been saying too, Dave. I mean, the reality of it is we intervene and we look at the person as a whole. The person might have cardiovascular disease. There's not an adjustment in the spine that says you adjust this vertebra and the heart will function better. That's not how it works. What we do know, though, through science and research, we know that there's a link between cervical spine, degenerative disc disease, and bone spurs, and cardiovascular complications. And it's exactly what you two have both said. It's a breakdown of the system as a whole. So yes, we need to intervene to the spine. Yes, we need to also make dietary and nutritional modifications. And then ask your doctor if getting off your butt is right for you, and let's exercise, right?
Now, in your training, did you guys get training in nutrition?
Yes.
How many hours would you say, just ballpark?
Well, Life University, I mean, there were several classes, so I don't know what the hours add up to, but it was an integral part of the curriculum.
Like 100 plus, actually probably way more than that if it's an integral part.
Yeah, it's baked into the curriculum. I mean, there's a lot of it.
And compared to the 8 hours in medical school that the average physician gets? So you're maybe more trained than the average MD, although there are MDs who are not average. I mean, like there's, you know, Mark Hyman, I think, is a mutual friend, and David Perlmutter, and there are guys who are incredibly knowledgeable in nutrition who have MDs, but it's usually not from their MD studies where they got it, unless they're a clinical nutritionist and an MD. So a lot of people who have not ever been to a chiropractor don't understand that chiropractic includes a lot of nutrition, whereas you might not get that. One of the things that really pissed me off when I was living in a house that had water damage, had toxic mold in it, And I was having all kinds of stuff happen to my health. I ended up doing a documentary about this really common problem. By the way, one of the big problems was ribs would become, they'd pop out of, in my upper back, my rib heads would pop out of my spine. It was terribly painful. And this would actually happen in response to toxins. And all this crazy stuff was going on. And I went to the doctor and I had all these weird symptoms, including these rib heads popping out and things like that. And I had started gaining weight again, even though I'd lost about 50 of the 100 pounds I needed to lose. And the things that I'd done before weren't working, and I just felt like a zombie. And he said, maybe you should lose some weight. And I said, yeah, that's a really good idea. How do you recommend I do that? Because nothing works, and I've tried all these things. And he goes, you should try eating a healthy diet. And I was like, I wanted to kill him. I'm like, really? Like that's all you have for me? But compared to the chiropractors I've seen, they would have at least said, you could try this, you could try that, you could try not eating stuff that's inflammatory. And I was blown away. But that leads me to assuming everyone listening now understands, all right, you're likely to get a more holistic point of view from a chiropractor than you are from your GP. Although if you have a broken bone, you might want to go to your GP. Like there's both practices are very useful. I also wanted to ask you a question. One is, I'm sensitive to lectins, the nightshade vegetables, at least some of them. And when I eat one of my favorite foods, which is New Mexico green chili, I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I never knew this. I just always had upper back and neck pain and all. But one of my vertebrae moves a half inch to the side a half hour after I eat green chili. It literally shifts. What the hell? Why does that happen? And if we push the vertebra back in, does that mean I can eat green chili?
Dean, I'll let you start off and I'll finish.
Okay. The perception there is you feel this issue, you know, and really what you're feeling is it's a muscle spasm. It's a nerve irritation that's driven by an organ irritation. We call it visceral somatic reflexes. Mm-hmm. It's been known for a long, long time that organs don't just do what they do on their own. They communicate, you know, via the central nervous system and peripheral nervous system to the brain. And they say, hey, brain, something bad's going on here. And then brain tries to do some things too. But then there's this cross circuit that goes from the organ to the spine and to the muscles. So when you have a visceral irritation from eating whatever food it is, you're going to have spinal consequences. It's no different than a person that's having a heart attack feeling chest pain or arm pain or numbness and tingling in the hand. It's a visceral somatic reflex. The adjustment will help quiet that down, but the reality of it is it's driven by the visceral system in that case, so you need to not eat that food again. That's the reality of it.
I think... Yeah, that's a great explanation, you know, how everything's just intricately connected. And likewise, that's the conversation that chiropractors will have with their patients. If a patient comes in, for example, with a thyroid issue or a liver issue, or they're feeling tired, fatigued, or they have Hashimoto's thyroiditis or Graves' disease or any one of these conditions or a reflux, the conversation always has to go back to what Dr. Deed was saying, is that there's a direct somato-visceral-visceral-somatic influence. There's a reflexive arc going on there neurologically. So, for example, someone has been diagnosed with a thyroid issue. So the conversation a chiropractor may bring up during a consult and exam would be that, well, let's look at the nerves in the back that are coming out, for example. What should we look at? Look at the liver. Is the nerve innervation, the nerve connection, the part of the spine that controls the liver, is it getting information there? Is the liver even getting right neurological control? Because if you have a thyroid problem, well, we know that over 60% of T4 is converted to T3 in the liver. So what happens if you're not getting good nerve supply or signals to your liver? It doesn't matter. I mean, you can be completely off balance. You may never heal or get better from a thyroid issue if you don't have good nerve supply and function to the liver or the stomach. Between T5 and T9, that's the primary gastric distribution, neurological distribution to the stomach. And we know that you have to have good nerve supply for everything going on in the stomach, including hydrochloric acid. You need high levels of acid in the stomach to digest food, break down proteins, get to the B12, get to the minerals, get to the vitamins and all that. And if you can't get to the minerals, especially things like zinc and selenium and all these other things, then you can't convert, you can't make thyroid hormone, you can't convert it. The immune system's going to get driven down. You're going to have all these complications across the board, including T8, 9, 10, the adrenal communication. So again, the chiropractor is looking at everything, not just disease conditions, but just to begin with, start with the foundation. Is life flowing from the brain through the spine over these nerves and bringing function to these organs to begin with? And has any doctor ever checked that? Not that there aren't other considerations going on downstream, but just starting upstream and helping the patient, facilitating that understanding and connecting the dots. And it all starts with function, nerve system, spine. That's where a chiropractor would start. Even if, like, there's someone like me who focuses heavily on nutrition and the end organ phenomenon, you still got to go upstream to the spine and that look at that visceral, somatic, somatovisceral, you know, deal there.
People oftentimes don't know about something called event correlation. And where I come from in high tech, there's whole systems that we've developed that are around looking at events that happen in one system and then correlating them with events in another. We use these a lot in computer security. We use these a lot in figuring out when someone comes to a website, like what are they going to do next? But on the human body, there's a whole bunch of these event correlation things. And I just brought up this example of one. When I eat X, Y happens in my spine, and probably a bunch of other stuff happens. I can tell you there's inflammation and there's changes in blood clotting things that happen because lectins are part of that whole story. Right, so we know that's going on, and that's one observable thing. And I find that the best clinicians are usually subconsciously or consciously really good event correlation machines. But some of the events that I've seen measured in some chiropractic offices that are fascinating to me are, well, clearly you get x-rays, you can see alignment. But I've also seen just a thermograph, a picture of infrared coming off the spine. And you can, in fact, you can get a $300 camera that goes on your iPhone and do like the poor man's version of this. But you can actually see like there's a part of the spine that's hotter than the other parts of the spine. What's going on there and why does it matter?
Well, I'll let Dr. Deed get into kind of more of the science behind it. But we use thermal imaging. We use EMG. There's a company called Chiropractic Leadership Alliance. Dr. Patrick Gentempo, who had created this as a whole package of the Insight technology, which combines, actually, and you'll find this fascinating, heart rate variability, thermal imaging, EMG. It's also got a couple other things that there's range of motion digitally and algometry to test pain. They actually combine all of the scores from these and create a wellness score. But the thermography, what it's reading is heat differentials in different areas of the spine that are related to vasoconstriction, vasodilation. And of course, the nerve system is controlling the diameter of the arteries around the spine. So when we run a thermal image or the scan or the rollers up a spine, it can show indirectly, because of the heat differential, it could be indirectly interpreted or secondarily interpreted as a neurological disturbance in that area. And that's just one of the tools that we use in our office, along with several others, especially x-rays being primary, to identify where are the primary biomechanical and neurological impediments, interferences. Just one more way of looking at the body. So yeah, it's a fascinating technology. A lot of chiropractors are using it.
Cool. Adid, what do you think?
All these outcome measures are very important. It paints a picture of there is some type of disturbance to the system. There's asymmetry. There's asymmetry in heat. There's asymmetry in muscle activity. There's an alteration in visceral function with heart rate variability, et cetera. That's the clinical side of it. We know that. The challenge is, what does that mean science-wise and research-wise? It's really hard to, you know, put that into research context. For example, to play the skeptic, the issue is, how long does it take to normalize temperature differentials in the body when I do a thermography scan? Well, you have to be in a contained room with no airflow, and it's got to be the same temperature. The patient has to be in the nude for 20 minutes to normalize their body's overall temperature across the skin. Because if I sit down, if I lean on one side, if I touch a structure with my arm, I'm going to get a temperature differential. So, you know, we've got this, again, this interplay between the research problem and the clinical interpretation. The reality, I think the clinician doesn't really care. We just know there's a problem. The clinician looks at this and says, you've got the following problems with your wellness score, like Dr. Dan brought up. All these things put together, they show me there is a problem somewhere. Let's see if we can normalize this and let's see what happens.
That makes good sense. That made me think about how I could speed up that 20 minutes. There are a bunch of chiropractors who use the Bulletproof Vibe, the whole body vibration platform that I make in their practice. Are you guys fans of whole body vibration or not fans? And couldn't like shaking the body up, like get things moving a little more quickly?
Well, I got eight of them in my office. And I know, nice. I know Deed's got he's got a whole collection of them too.
I didn't know that. That's cool. All right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. So, I've got eight power plates. That's what I use. The Power Plate Pro 7s. So
yeah, those are really nice machines.
Yeah, we use them for two things. Number one, we use it in actual fitness classes that we do, a true functional movement fitness class with proper trainers. And then we also use it for spine rehabilitation and injuries. So huge fan of whole body vibration.
Now, why do you like that? Like a lot of people ask, like Dave, you're crazy. You have this this thing on your website. It's not coffee. It's not a supplement. I'm like, because it sort of kicks ass, and it's not at the same level as the Power Plate. Like the Power Plate is extremely nice and clinically expensive. But I'm completely a fan of it because it moves in the right axis. But what like why does it work for functional movement? Like I'm sure people listening would because most people have never even heard of this stuff. What does it do that's special when you're working with someone on movement?
Yeah, whole body vibration is really interesting. It's accelerating you at different G forces or at different intensities multiplied by gravity. So like the Power Plate, for example, that's the one I'm trained in. That's the one I use. So with the Power Plate, I can set it at 1G, 2Gs, 3Gs, all the way up to 8Gs. What that means is I'm training you either at 1 times the acceleration of gravity or in the extreme setting, 8 times the acceleration of gravity. That's a lot of acceleration. And what your body has to do when you're on the Power Plate, your body has to contract and coordinate its orientation under gravity to these whole body vibrations. So I have high acceleration, and I also have some amplitude in there that's going up and down, as well as left and right, forward and backwards. So it creates what's called perturbations to the system, meaning it's creating instability in your system. Your body then has to contract and control these perturbations and maintain stability in an unstable environment. And so what it does is it triggers a neurological as well as a physiological response out of bone, muscles, etc. And you actually what you're doing is retraining your body's movement, you're retraining your body's balance, you're increasing the strength of the connective tissue, and you're increasing the density of the bone. And so you do those all three simultaneously. Whole body vibration is really an amazing tool. The last thing I'll say about it, and I'll turn it over to you guys, is most people, like, they go to the gym and we look at the force equation. Force is mass times acceleration. Well, you go to the gym and the guy or the gal puts mass, weight, in their hand. And so they're increasing force on their body by increasing mass. Well, we've forgotten about the A side of the equation. A is the acceleration. That's what the Power Plates or any whole body vibration system does. It works on the A side of the force equals mass times acceleration part of the equation.
Very, very well said. And I just noticed huge differences, not just like muscle, but more lymphatic and circulation. And I'm a big fan, big enough fan to go out and get one made. I broke some of the really cheap ones probably because I'm 200 plus pounds. Now we're running up on the end of the show here, and I want a chance to ask both of you the signature question for Bulletproof Radio. So, Dan, let's start with you. If someone came to you tomorrow and said, look, I want to kick more ass at everything I do. I want to be better at being human. What are the three most important pieces of advice you have for me? What would you say?
Well, get adjusted. Regularly, okay. Have your spine checked. Because it's about performance. It's not about sickness and disease necessarily chiropractic. It's about You know, that's why we take care of kids, babies, the ones who are challenged with issues. But I delivered, like yourself, I delivered my babies at home, my Belle and my Juliet, with a midwife supervising, and I checked their spines immediately. They've grown strong and healthy over the years here, and that's it. You know, it's really bulletproofing our kids first, but yep. Chiropractic has the ability of bulletproofing you in a way to really prevent many issues down the road, to give you a great quality of health, great quality of life now, instead of be proactive instead of reactive. Be open-minded. You know, this program that we just recorded may have presented a lot of new points, new ideas, new paradigms, maybe challenged some folks out there. But all in all, you know, the best, I think one of the greatest things you can do is be open-minded to new ideas, new concepts. And that's the only way you can learn and grow. And then I think one of the greatest ways to, you know, develop a strong purpose in life, because more than anything, that's going to get you up in the morning, give you energy, give you focus. I think more than anything, like yourself, you have a strong purpose. You want to reach the world with a great, great message and a great company that's helping so many people. It's energizing. So find a very strong purpose, serving others and improving and adding value to people's lives. I think that's one of the greatest ways you can biohack. So.
Thank you. And Deed, what do you say?
That's awesome. And I know you said three, but I've got a four.
Sorry. All right, you get a bonus one just because you've written 100 papers. Every 100 papers, you get one extra.
And this is the culture that I've set up for my office. And when I train chiropractors, this is my culture. Number one is better posture, better spine equals better health. That's number one for me as a chiropractor. Your spine and posture dictate the health of the human body. You know, you can just look at somebody. Yeah, thanks for sitting up straight, guys. You can look at somebody without even knowing them, and you judge them instantly on how healthy they are just by their appearance, right? So better posture, better spine, better health. That's one. Number two is you are what you eat. And this is a huge deal, right? You guys have both touched on this. If you don't feed your body the right type of fuel and put in the right types of nutrients that are missing, your body is not going to heal. So nutrition and diet, huge, mm-hmm. huge role. And, you know, lots under that umbrella, of course. Number three is, if you don't move, you lose. People are so damn sedentary that a lot of things we see that are health disorders, it's simply because your body's breaking down due to lack of proper strength, stability, and movement. You got to exercise, right? You got to do it. And then number four for me is you got to focus on your personal and emotional needs. And what that encompasses is lifestyle relationships, personal time for you, for your friends, for your family, and connecting with other human beings on this planet, right? You know that when you're in a crappy mood, if somebody comes to you that's in a great mood, they pick you up instantly. They do. Conversely, you're in a good mood, somebody's in a crappy mood, they can also bring you down. So if we all try to resonate at a little bit of a higher energy level, things will improve and will be better.
Very, very well said. Now, for listeners who are interested in checking out more of what you're doing in each of your clinical practices, Dan Yachter, what is the URL they should go to?
They can go to elevationhealth.com, elevationhealth.com, or they can reach me directly at dryachter@gmail.com. It's dryachter@gmail.com.
Now, you realize 250,000 people are listening to this. Are you sure you want them to email you?
Well, actually, we could edit that and just put Dr. Deed's email on there. But no, I don't mind. It's all good. You know, I'm here to help folks, and we could screen them out if we need to. I don't know.
All right, you're gonna want some help with your email if you can.
But I do have also one other resource too. Anybody out there, any parents out there who want to learn more about chiropractic pediatrics, what it can do for kids, how it can help performance, case studies, more research, additional references, icpaforkids.org, ICPA, the number four, kids.org is a great, great resource for folks to go to, especially parents with kids.
Thanks. And Deed Harrison, what's your URL?
Yeah, I would really love the listeners to go to idealspine.com. So ideal, I-D-E-A-L, spine, S-P-I-N-E.com. And that's a resource for both chiropractors and for patients. There's a consumer side to it. They can see some nice information about what chiropractic biophysics is all about from a holistic treatment approach.
All right. If you enjoyed today's show, go to one of those URLs. And if you didn't get those, don't worry about it, because the transcript for Bulletproof Radio is available for free on bulletproofexec.com. You can read everything we said. It's entirely searchable. And you can click on any part of it you like, and it'll take you to just that snippet on YouTube. So you can actually hear that part of the conversation that you found. It's one of the first interactive transcripts that was even available on the web. We pioneered that technology. So it's coming along nicely, where you can just find all this information in any way that you absorb it best, because it's really important that you be able to see it, and it includes the URLs that you can go to. I'd also love it if you checked out where we are on iTunes and just clicked the leave a review and say what you think about the show. That really, really helps, and it helps other people find the show as well. We're regularly ranked number one on iTunes in the health and fitness category, and I'm not going to stop till we're number one ranked on iTunes, period. And when we get there, I'm not going to stop either, because I'm having fun, and because the feedback that comes in from the show, I know that it's helping literally millions of people. I mentioned 250,000 of you may have listened to this episode. That's just in the first month or two. There's pushing now 25 million downloads of Bulletproof Radio. So this is reaching huge numbers of people, and it's helping them, and they keep listening because it works. So thank you for listening. Thanks for your time today. Hopefully you got some real valuable stuff from the show, and I look forward to seeing you on the next one.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem, or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.